Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Bring it fast.
Hello and welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at EPLRoundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Steve McGookin. I'm a former chairman of the New York Spurs Supporters Club, and I'm here in Belfast.
Hi, I'm Jay Crowley, founder editor of the EaglesBeat.com, a Palace fan site by fans for fans. I'm also producer and co-host of the Music and Sports Social on a local community radio station, which you can get us on Twitter at MeridianSS, and the EaglesBeat, you can get us at the EaglesBeat.
Hi there, I'm Doc Joshi. I'm a Manchester United fan. I'm back on Twitter, actually, after a bit of a hiatus. Hey. So you can find me at Medi Joshi, MediJoshi, and I do all sorts of other stuff like podcasts and appear on YouTube channels as well. So from a football perspective, my background has helped me do a special on this podcast on the COVID-19, so that's good.
Yeah, we appreciated Joshi coming on and talking about the COVID-19 stuff right before the Premier League shut down. We did a whole show talking about how they needed to. And then they did, so I assume that they were listening. hopefully they will do so again today. It's an absolute pleasure to have you guys on in the midst of all this insanity. It's nice to be able to sit down and record a show once more. The reason why we're doing so now is there has been a lot of updates lately about how this is being handled, and we'll obviously get to that in due course. But I wanted to start off with the 30% wage discussion. So this came up pretty heavily throughout the week and then was even addressed in the Friday shareholders meeting that was held by the Premier League, encouraging the players to take 30% pay cuts in order to pay non-playing staff. The PFA have since refuted that, saying that if there's no formal plan, that they may just be lining the pockets of the club and the shareholders themselves. If they agree to this, they'd much rather just give directly to charities that need it. So I was just curious to start off with that, since it has been so rampant, especially in the social media spaces this week. Where do you fall on this debate of whether or not the players should be the ones picking up the tab for club staff members that obviously are not players?
Well, thanks for having me on, Kevin, to talk about what is obviously a sort of tragic and very, very serious topic. I think the problem at the moment is that everything's so fluid. Everything is literally, there are more important things that the government has to deal with. There are more important things that we as individuals have to deal with. And as often in something where society divides, where it's a polarizing issue, it's very often about optics. I mean, if you are the sort of person who's antagonistic towards young men making a lot of money, you probably always will be, and you'll probably cast a lot of responsibility on them that maybe they don't deserve. And we'll come on to that in a little bit. But it's interesting, the whole idea of actually putting a number, putting a value, a 30% value on how much someone's earnings should be reduced by is not a precedent, really, I think anybody wants to set. But I think the government at the moment are in panic mode. They're sort of feeling they should be doing something, but they know that there's other things more important that they need to be doing. And this is all about optics. It's all about perception. It's all about how clubs are going to appear and players individually are going to appear. And I mean, I presume you saw the PFA statement today that basically said, you know, if we took a 30%, if we instructed our members to take a 30% pay cut, that would be a lot less revenue, less tax revenue going into the exchequer, which could then help the NHS. Now, you know, again, optics, that's talk about trying to put a positive spin on something. I mean, that statement is positively Roberto Carlos, basically. But I think it is all about this idea of how people think about the value of footballers and what people should be paying for. If you buy a season ticket to a club, who are you bailing out? What are you getting for your value? And so, you know, I think there is really a sense that it's hard to avoid a pylon if you're the sort of person that would really sort of jump at criticizing the players for being rich and pampered and that sort of thing. You're going to do that anyway, no matter what anybody says. And some of the players are certainly making themselves in the game. But of course, as we all know, as individuals, they do an awful lot of good in their local communities. I mean, over here, for example, James McLean, you know, the Stoke player who gets a lot of grief on social, let's be honest, and a lot of it he brings on himself, which is true. But he just made a huge PPE donation to hospital workers in Derry. And that was kind of an important statement to make for him. But there's hundreds of those. And Danny Rose, again, is exactly another one. There are hundreds of examples of those types of individual statements of generosity that I think go above and beyond any kind of policy issue. So, you know, it is the sort of thing. There's unease, I think, about how club managements have manipulated, or club ownerships have manipulated the stimulus program affecting their lowest paid workers. And I think, you know, even if you make symbolic gestures, it's better than doing nothing at all. And it's always going to be, there are always going to be people who think you're not doing enough. But I think one of the things we have to remember here fundamentally is that football isn't just about the Premier League. It's, you know, there are smaller clubs further down who are going to be in big and ongoing financial trouble as a result of this. I mean, a lot of the lower clubs basically get by from season to season. So I think we have to see the industry as an entire whole. And one of the things we can think about is, well, how do we move forward at the end of this, whenever the end comes, and however the sport looks, and however sport in general looks, basically. But yeah, I mean, I think it's still a fluid situation, and really, you know, as I say, it's about optics. It's about everybody trying to sort of respond to a situation that really none of us have any experience in knowing how to respond to.
Steve, some really good points there. I wanted to pick up on a couple, actually. I find it ludicrous in the first instance that footballers have been pinpointed in this way. I know for a fact that, you know, the way that footballers are paid and the amount that footballers are paid in this country has always been a bit of a topic of discussion for people that probably don't follow football. Even some football fans probably question, you know, some of the higher salaries in the Premier League. But I think they've been unfairly targeted. As you mentioned, a lot of footballers up and down the Premier League do a lot of good, and they don't make it known to the press. You know, it's not, you know, they don't go around shouting about things that they do and donations that they do. And, you know, a lot of footballers I know from Palace and a lot of London clubs do an awful lot of good for, you know, charities in and around the club and in the local communities. So it's unfair, I think, to point the finger at footballers when, you know, there's no mention of, you know, Formula One drivers or other highly paid sportsmen in the country. It's really a difficult one to understand. I do get it. It was a journalist making a comment directly to the health secretary, but, you know, I think he was probably foolish enough to give the answer that he has and kind of stuck by it. Let's not get into politics here. It's just a bit of a rant there because I find it ludicrous that, you know, footballers are well paid, yes, but, you know, they're treating them as if they don't do anything for charity or for communities, and that's just not right at all. Another question to me would be, some clubs haven't done themselves any favours, let's be honest. Well, I say clubs, owners haven't done themselves any favours by furloughing staff. You know, the Premier League is a very rich football league, as we know it, a division even. And, you know, so that you've only got to look at how much the playoff final is worth, you know, from the Championship each season. you know, it's furloughing staff is, I find that a very hard pill to swallow from certain clubs. I would possibly expect it from some of the lower clubs in the Premier League, perhaps some of the clubs that have just come up this season. But even then, you know, they're still getting a good share of the finances, the money and what goes to them. But obviously that doesn't kind of come until towards the end of the season anyway. So it's, you know, I guess that's a bit of a moot point in a way. But that doesn't do us any favours when it comes to the Premier League and the clubs in it. But up and down the Premier League, there's a lot of good stuff being done. You know, Steve Parish from Palace has guaranteed that he will continue paying the non-playing staff at Palace throughout this period, however long it lasts. So, you know, that's one club that's doing some good things. And obviously, you know, there's other clubs in the Premier League that are doing good things as well. That kind of gets forgotten when, you know, this finger pointing has kind of gone on this last few days about Premier League footballers. And there's that whole bigger conversation around, you know, cutting players' wages means that there's lower tax and national insurance being paid from those wages that footballers being paid anyway. So it's, you know, could be a little bit of, you know, cutting the nose off spite of the face. But yeah, it's very odd times, isn't it? We've never experienced this kind of thing before, and we're all kind of learning and finding our way through it, through the dark a little bit. And you know, hopefully, you know, the end will come sooner than we hope. But yeah, it's really difficult times, and it sometimes feels difficult to be talking about sport. I miss sport as much as the next person. We were talking off air just then, and you know, during the year, I kind of bounce between sports. You know, when one sport ends a season, then I'm on to the next one, and you know, I'm following two or three sports at one kind of time. But at the moment, it's very peculiar. Just hope people are staying safe, doing the right thing, and you know, we'll get through this. But yeah, it's a very odd scenario for a sport such as football, but it's the same for a lot of other sports out there. A lot of other massive events have been called off this year. When we do come out the other side of it, there's going to be nothing to look forward to the rest of this year, unfortunately. But I think the bigger thing is, the bigger picture is coming out of it safe and well, and we'll go from there.
Points made by both of the guys, and actually just going to pick up on that last one point first. I think it's fine to be talking about sport and missing it, right? Because we care about it, we like it, we enjoy it. Mm. It's just like anyone else. You take away what might be, like, for us is a hobby, a passion, something that we just love watching or doing or playing, whether it's music, sport, movies, whatever it is. If you take it away, people are going to miss it. So I think that's fine, and I think it's okay to be like, oh, you know, to be focused in those areas, because you kind of want it back and whatnot. But obviously in this situation, the focus from a media perspective and now recently political perspective is football and footballers' pay. And it has been for a while in the UK media, right? Nobody, like you said, nobody bangs on about Lewis Hamilton's pay and you know, other sports. Golfers get paid a lot as well. You know, the top guys, obviously, I don't mean every one of them, but tennis stars, whoever it might be, footballers aren't the only ones that are earning a lot of money. For me, a broad 30% pay cut doesn't make sense. I think I don't have a solution. It's a difficult one. I think a lot of players have taken it upon themselves. So I know at United, they are going to be donating 30% of their current pay to local NHS and community kind of initiatives in which are helping directly with the COVID-19 stuff. And we mentioned a lot of players have done individual stuff. So like Marcus Rashford has paid for 400,000 meals for kids and things like that. So people are doing that. And I think I prefer that to a broad 30% cut, because individual clubs are going to have their own individual situations. That said, I think we're going to talk about the furloughing piece a little bit later on, but it shouldn't be on the football players to cover a club's costs. I'm not, you know, if you're at a point where you're paying your club, you're not running your club well enough to be able to pay your kind of, let's say, your non-playing staff in it's only a month, right? It's not, we're not talking a year. At the moment, that scheme is in place for a month. So or 3 weeks even, I think. I'm not sure, but for a month at least, I think. But if you can't do that, then you're not running your club properly. And it is, to me, it's unacceptable. If you look at the Premier League accounts from not the season that's been paused, but the previous season, because they've been published, in terms of purely TV money that's been paid out to the clubs. The bottom club that year was Huddersfield, and they got £96 million, right? So when you, and that's just purely the TV money. And you're thinking, look, if you're not managing your club well enough to pay, I'm not singling out Huddersfield Town, it's just an example of where the money is, the level of money. If you're not able to pay your staff, non-playing staff, if for a month in that time, and you're going to go to the government for 80% of their pay. It doesn't sit right with me. It doesn't sit right with me that the football players are being targeted and are being told to take a broad 30% cut. That doesn't make sense either, because they shouldn't be covering it. I totally would back any kind of, let's say the PFA said, right, instead of, I think they've come out and said, we don't agree with the cut because ultimately the tax that gets paid on that amount of money would be, you'd end up losing 200 million, right, from the government. They've worded it, you'd lose 200 million from the NHS, but their tax doesn't directly go to the NHS, so that's not the point.
Right.
But for me, if the individual clubs have to deal with it in their own ways, right? Some clubs may be able to cover it without having to affect the players or anyone, and other clubs may need that, but I think it's an individual thing. So if players chipped together and went, right, we're not going to, what we'll do is after we've been paid, we'll then give back a certain amount so that some of the guys can get paid. That I think would work, and that everyone is happy. But a broad 30% cut doesn't make sense. And targeting them is just, it's standard though, isn't it, in the UK? They've always been targeted as, you know, they're generally young, young guys who generally don't come from, wealthy backgrounds. So it's kind of always a little bit like, you know, they're an easy target, and we've seen it for the last 30 years I've been following football in English football. We've just seen it all the time. They come into money fairly quickly at a young age, a lot of it, and now especially a lot of it, and they're just an easy target, I think. And I think that's a bit unfair, and I know Jay mentioned not wanting to make it political, but yes, Matt Hancock was asked the question, so he answered, but then he's continuing to answer the same question in the same way. Yeah. And that's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a problem, right? And the first time maybe you're caught off guard and he says, they shouldn't be doing this. But after that, he's just got to leave it alone and say, look, I've got way more things to be dealing with at the moment. Why are you asking me this question?
I think also a big part of that, and you're absolutely right, they're scrambling to basically catch up with this. A big part of that is just the precedent of targeting high earners, no matter what section of the community or what section of the economy they come from, is not something that fundamentally the Conservative Party want to do.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true. And I mean, that's the other point that was made, right? There are hedge fund managers who earn, like, if you're, that's just an example, right? Hedge fund manager. I just looked up the other day because I was thinking about it. The highest paid hedge fund manager in 2018, because that was the numbers that I could find, he increased his wealth and earned £170 million in a single year. Oh, well, you know, nobody's going off. They should take a 30%
drop, yeah, exactly,
and hand in that cash, yeah, you know, because it doesn't make sense. And, you know, let's go bankers, you know, the top end bankers, CEOs of companies. Nobody's going off. They should all be whatever, right? So why is it that these young guys who are, you know, they're generally, I think they're decent guys, and you see that they do decent stuff, but at the same time, it's their money as well, right? We're not, you know, and then you've got these huge corporations like Virgin asking for, you know, sacking off their staff, asking for money, and there are lots of other companies. It's just a bit of an odd situation, but we know that the UK media love to do this to footballers, generally footballers, but sports stars as well.
Easy target. Absolutely, yeah, right.
And as you compare the two groups of, like, footballers versus other people with money, two things come to mind. The first, a CEO can be CEO until the day he dies. the earnings window of professional athletes, obviously way smaller. And second, it reminded me of an old Chris Rock bit when he said, people think Shaq is wealthy. Shaq isn't wealthy. Shaq is rich. The guy that signs Shaq's check is wealthy. And so kind of to that point of like, why are you targeting what in the full social stratosphere is, you know, nearer the middle? They are not the top of the pyramid. Yeah. So it is very strange that they continue to attack people in that middle group. It's easy to understand from a bottom to top perspective because everybody looks like financial giants when, you know, you're making thousands instead of millions.
Yeah.
But still, it is a little odd that it keeps being the footballers.
But why not? Why not musicians? Why not movie stars? Yeah, why, you know, they're all in the same echelon. And like you mentioned, Kev, is a good point, is that footballers have a shelf life. Their earnings are for a relatively short period of time, whereas, like you say, a hedge fund manager or a banker, it's pretty much for life until they retire, you know? I know things could go wrong during that point, but nobody said anything about musicians or movie stars or, you know, any other sports, which just grates me the most.
But you know what it is as well? You know what it is as well? For, like, the average person in the UK, footballers are more kind of relate. We relate to them more, right? Because they don't tend to be highly educated, and I don't mean they're fit, I just mean that they don't go to university and get, you know, law degrees and medical degrees and economics degrees, generally speaking. So they're relatable. They're like the, oh, that could have been me kind of guy. And then you see them, they earn 10 million a year or whatever, and then you kind of go, oh, look at that wanker in his Bentley and now he's refusing to give up money. You know, it's that's also part of it. I think you relate to them and and the club you've always loved. You know, as a kid, I've watched United for over 30 years and I've loved that club. There's so many players coming through. I kind of relate to them. When I was a kid, I used to pretend I had the same birthday as Brian Robson. My mum used to get really pissed off at me. But, you know, I can see why people get, it's so emotional about it and it's an emotive topic. So that's another reason another reason why people are very quick to jump onto to footballers as opposed to like some of the other professions we've already mentioned.
Well, I mean, money in football is one of those discussions, one of those debates that's never going away. I mean, sadly, I wrote an obituary when George Best passed away, and one of the lines was, you know, that there are players, average players today, who make more in a month than Best made in his entire career. And you know, it's just a matter of perspective. But I think the point about Kevin's Chris Rock story is, these guys are employees, and you know, there isn't an employer anywhere that if you went to them and said, would you like to reduce your wage bill by 25% and still keep the number of employees and have their input, that there isn't an employer anywhere that wouldn't agree to that.
Yeah, it's the guys at the top, right? We talk about clubs, but it is, like you said, the owners need to kind of take responsibility in these situations.
Yeah.
In clubs, there are, you know, the ownership is a big issue, more maybe than in other companies where you've got like CEO type leadership. You don't quite have that same like business-like structure, although obviously football is a business. So, you know, I think, again, going back to the question, I don't think the answer is a broad 30% pay cut. It's more nuanced than that. And I think the targeting is unfair.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Yeah, so we've touched on a lot of the finances throughout that section. So I kind of wanted to run with that and talk to you guys about what financial ramifications you think we'll see in football both during and after this pandemic. I know there were a couple articles already doing the rounds of, have we seen the last £100 million transfer fee, or if players in general will be getting lower wages in future, or how this will affect TV deals, especially if leagues can't complete their seasons. Just what do you think the financial landscape of football will look like both during and after this period?
Well, I would say, like off the top of my head, as much as we don't know how this is going to resolve itself and whether the season is going to be completed, I would say fundamentally contracts will look very different in years to come. I mean, however, regardless of the numbers involved, just in terms of the liability that clubs are going to have to pay players in situations such as this, I think you're going to see changes to player contracts. That actually will try and encompass some of this cataclysmic situation and try and codify it into the way in which contracts are agreed.
That's such a difficult one, isn't it? Because like you said there, Steve, it's, you know, there's no end in sight to this at the moment, and how the season's going to be resolved, if at all, for this season, and what decision's going to be made on that front. We've seen already in Belgium a decision's been made on their season, but we're waiting for other leagues to kind of follow. It's so difficult to know. I do believe that there's going to be the future's going to look very different. As to what aspects it's going to look different, I'm not sure, but I think there's going to be a lot of rethinking as to both in business and across sport in terms of, you know, how contracts are structured, like you said there, Steve, rightly so. How owners view things, how footballers probably view things a little bit as well, and certainly from a fan perspective, hopefully this is just a one-off, and we're not going to encounter anything similar in our lifetimes again. But who knows? You know, we just don't know. And this pandemic that's affecting the whole world is just something that, you know, we've already mentioned, we don't know when it's going to end and how sport is going to get back to some sort of normality. I mean, we've already seen the Olympics move to next year, the European Championships move to next year. It's only really the season sports that need to make a decision and think about what needs to be done to this season. Obviously, contracts situation, you know, at the end of June is going to be an issue and that sort of thing. So it's just absolute chaos, isn't it? It really is chaos, you know, from the season just being suspended for, what was it? I think it was like 3 or 4, was it 3 weeks to start with or 2 weeks? They said it was going to be suspended until they saw the true realization of how things were, you know, we're going to change. And obviously now it's suspended across the board and, you know, non-league football's been, you know, the season's been null and void below the National League, which is going to kill a few clubs. There's no doubt about it. I know some clubs in this area that were struggling financially already, and they're going to be hit big time. And I think it's going to cull a few football clubs, unfortunately, because they just can't keep existing on, you know, paying the players and that kind of thing and just not seeing out a season and getting those crowds in, which is, you know, which is the real downside to this story, isn't it? We've got a proud heritage in this country from football and the size of the pyramid and how far down it goes compared to other countries. The non-league pyramid is gonna struggle big time. It really is. I just think things are gonna change. I'm not sure quite how, but I think there's gonna be a lot of people thinking very differently going forward.
Yeah, I totally agree, and that's not just in football. I think, you know, putting on a bit of my medical hat and understanding how this is likely to pan out, the whole world has changed, right? Everything, everyone. It's kind of probably, in some areas, maybe a bit of an awakening. In other areas, it's going to be a tweaking. But fundamentally, the world has changed. And, you know, let me give bringing it back to the football side of things, I personally think people are crazy to think that the season that's just been paused is going to restart. I think the next season is at risk already. I'll tell you why. And this relates, I guess, maybe a bit to the contracts piece as well. Because no matter what happens with this current lockdown that we're in the UK, which isn't even a proper lockdown, but it's, you know the current restrictions that we've got in place, whatever happens with that, that's not going to resolve anything. We're not going to have any resolution to this until we've got a vaccine, which is only going to be available at the absolute earliest in about a year, right? But I think probably 18 months. There was some talk from the European Commission that one might be available this summer, but from what I've seen in development programs across the world, the most advanced one is a Moderna vaccine. And if everything goes smoothly, they start phase two studies in the summer, phase three at the beginning of next year. So I don't know what the European Commission were talking about. But anyway, there's a bit of a tangent. But basically what that means is we're probably, certainly what I would think of doing, because you can't keep in a lockdown for indefinitely for 18 months. Yeah, I totally get that. From a medical and scientific perspective, if we're looking at purely controlling this virus, you would just go lockdown. You would then go test, contact trace, isolate those guys, and then get it under control, allow the NHS to prep, and then just continue doing that. But we know that obviously that's just not possible. People get stir crazy. You know, the economy, you know, needs to sort of carry on. So there will be, I think, once we have a point where we're testing massively and able to do it properly, if we ever get there, we will have probably rolling lockdown. So where we find hotspots, they'll lock down that town or city or whatever it is, and then get that under control. And then also have an intermittent national lockdown. So you'll have maybe 3 weeks, 4 weeks in the winter months where everything is shut down, just like we are now. And that will continue, I don't know, in terms of the spacing, the timings of it, but that will continue, I think, for 18 months or so. I mean, when you look at countries who have supposedly had it under control and then started letting people out a little bit, like in Hong Kong, they did that. In Japan, they've done that. They're starting to see an uptick. China are starting to see a few more cases as well again. So this isn't something that's just going to go away because we've had a lockdown. So to say that, if the season that was just been paused needs to be finished, I think is ludicrous anyway. But then the next season has to be structured in a way where you're able to incorporate this four-week periods where you don't have anything going on, depending on the timings. And that will reflect in contracts and things like that. So it's not a case of the contracts will have a clause, well, a pandemic clause or an alien invasion clause, but it will be more adaptive. It will be maybe like more of it will be pay per play kind of payments and achievements. You know, did you win a trophy? That type of stuff and bonuses and more of it will be in that kind of area. Than sort of prorated in terms of how much you played and things like that, then it will be in here's 10 million a year. And I know not they don't all earn 10 million a year, but you know what I mean? Just the majority of the salary, the majority of the package is the salary. And I think that will flip in terms of contracts. You'll also see potentially this could be the death of the League Cup. So take those fixtures out for next season. And potentially even depending on what the strategy is at a UK national level with the rolling lockdowns, that's my own kind of thought process on it. But if it was to go down that road, you could see the loss of the FA Cup at least for a season to incorporate these things. So stuff like that. And certainly we've already touched upon some of these lower league clubs are going to die. And I think in the future, hopefully this kicks people on to fund that grassroots area a bit more, like the Premier League's putting more money into those areas. I don't know. You hope that people come out of this having learned something, but unfortunately people aren't like that. So you can't predict what's going to happen, but there will be fundamental changes to the way in which we live, and that will affect football as well.
Unfortunately, Joshy, I totally agree with your pessimism on that, and I think it comes down to my initial thought was until there's a vaccine, we're not going to have spectator sports of any kind. You just can't have 25, 50,000 people gathered in the same place. You're just not going to be able to do that from a practice, regardless of how football organizes itself, just from a purely public safety consideration. We're initially talking about moving to playing behind closed doors in the short run. And then until we have a vaccine, you just can't have that level of assembly again.
Yeah, I agree. And even the behind closed doors piece is a little bit like, well, you're still going to have a few hundred people there because you're going to have the stadium has to be security and all that kind of stuff. And you've got all the staff and the coaching and the players and you know, this idea that you can put them into these kind of quarantine camps and then send them off to play. I mean, do the players want to do that? I mean, what the hell? Do you know what I mean?
And doubt it. Yeah.
And I'm sure if, you know, there's something in their contracts about, well, you know, I need to see my kids. I need to see my family. It doesn't make sense to me.
No.
And then you've got the added, the added sort of risk that when you start having these matches, for example, if the Premier League started up again next week, no doubt in my mind, you would have, it would be a small minority, but a small minority of like hundreds of thousands of fans is still enough to cause a problem. And we saw people like at the PSG behind closed doors game, there were 10,000 people outside the stadium.
Yeah, the Dortmund game, yeah.
Or imagine the match, say we did restart and you had Liverpool were about to win, whoever it is, whatever the match is, they need what, one more win, right? Or two more wins. They need two more wins. So they win the next match and then the next one. You think there's going to be Liverpool? Do you think every single Liverpool fan's going to go, oh, I'll just sit at home? And they'll want, there will be that small minority, because we're seeing it just now, you know, when there's no sport on, people are still hanging around. That last day when people were told, don't go out, everyone went, not everyone, but there was a whole bunch of people out on the lash going, oh, this doesn't affect me. You know, so in that situation, you're just unnecessarily creating an attraction for people to go to and hang out outside. They may go with the best of intentions saying, I'm going to keep my distance. But if, you know, even if like 1,000 people out of a 45,000 seat stadium, that's a minority, but it's still 1,000 people hanging out outside a stadium to try and pick up some kind of I was there moment when Liverpool won the league after 30 years. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That kind of risk to me is just, it's unnecessary. What are you thinking, right? So I just don't see it happening. And that's why I think the following season is, people talk about the one that's been paused. The following season is at risk. Right off this one that's gone, it's done. Decide what you want to do. Give the title to Liverpool, whatever it is. I don't have a solution on that front. But it's done. There's no, it's not going to happen.
Right.
So you've got to start coming up with how you resolve, I don't know, Champions League places or whatever you want to talk about, and start thinking about the next season. That's what I'd be thinking about. Like, what are we going to do to mitigate for what is likely going to be rolling, lockdowns? And are we able, are we pretty much going to have, you know, no more than 50 people in groups and that kind of stuff? Then that might get eased off. How are you going to do that? Are you going to have an entire season behind closed doors? We'll see. But that's what I'd be thinking about, is more the next season, not the one that's just gone.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, how do people prove that they've been vaccinated? Once we have a vaccine, if you say, well, we're not going to go back to how we were, but okay, we're going to try social distancing within the stadium. How do you only admit people who have some kind of vaccination certificate or something like that? I mean, it throws up so many sort of logistical difficulties of, you know, how do you reorganize spectator sports?
Yeah. I mean, look, the point, if we did have a vaccine, the point of a vaccine would be to break the chain of infection. Mm-hmm. So as long as 50 to 60% of the population is vaccinated, then you start to break that chain. So if you think currently, so I'm going back into a bit more of my kind of nerdy data stuff, but currently on average, each person who has this coronavirus passes it on to three people, and then they pass it on to another three each, and so on and so on. After 10 layers, you hit around 54,000, right? So one person could, after 10 kind of layers of passing on, has infected 54,000 people. If you cut that average down to about 1.4, which is the average for the normal flu, those 10 layers, so, you know, you infect one and a bit people on average and so on and so on, you only infect about 14 people, right? So it's a massive difference. So just cutting, so that's why staying at home is so important. Yeah. But it's the same as vaccinating. So if you vaccinate 60 to 70% of the population with a vaccine that's, let's say, 90% effective, you've, every other person is essentially breaking the chain. And it's that, that's what helps. So the certificate bit, you wouldn't need a certificate, but it is also a case of you still need to vaccinate 40 million people, right? Or 33 million people. Oh no, actually more than that, because it depends on the how effective the vaccine is. But right. you get my point, right? It's not an easy task, but once you're there, you're there.
Yeah. So you guys have brought up now the idea that this season won't be completed. Obviously, the Premier League haven't gotten there yet themselves, but they have indefinitely suspended the Premier League. They didn't use that term, but they said it'll be suspended until it is safe and appropriate, in air quotes, to return to play. Having already addressed the fact that you don't feel like the 2019-20 season will be played out, how do you guys feel the Premier League and the English game on the whole has handled this situation from minute one?
I don't think there's any rule book for this. It's literally, as Yoshi says, you know, everybody's trying to, you know, make it up as they go along, or just respond to the things that are happening literally on a day-to-day basis. I mean, it's hard enough to predict 24 hours ahead in this kind of situation, let alone, you know, 3 weeks or a month or a point at which we would want to resume the season. No, I think we're well past that point. And I think, as Yoshi said, really, we should be concentrating now on how we reorganize the structure of football for next season.
Yeah, completely agree. It's not something that anybody has got any experience of. It's just arrived at a point where, you know, nobody knows a lot about it. No rule book, as Steve rightly said. So I don't think we can criticise what the Premier League have done. They cancelled that first weekend. Albeit maybe, I mean, it was difficult to know even at that point where we were sitting in the whole scheme of things, from watching from afar, you know, what was going on in China and Italy as well. So, and obviously across to Spain and France. So I think they suspended the football at just the right time. A day before the weekend of games is probably, you know, inconvenient. But, you know, when you look back at it, it was the right decision at the right time to suspend it indefinitely, because obviously, you know, there's no way of playing for the next number of weeks or even months. You know, I can't see things changing for at least 2 or 3 months anyway. And like Joshy says, it's, you know, it's not so much this season. It's all about you know, how next season is organised and what decisions are made for that. In terms of what they do with the positions and who has what, it's an odd one, because, you know, the non-league structure have already decided to null and void their season, so none of the goals scored by anybody counts, although the fines still count, which I find a bit odd. The yellow card fines and the red cards, they still got to pay the fines, but even though they're not completing their season. So it's a bit difficult for those non-league clubs, because nothing is going to go down, you know, in the record books at all. Those goals and stuff and the results that have been played out are not going to be stored anywhere. So that's a bit different. I just wonder whether, not that the Premier League cares an awful lot about a non-league, as we know, but I wonder whether that kind of sets the precedence a little bit. Obviously, the National League is kind of involved, well, kind of linked in with the EFL and the Premier League as well, in terms of, you know, what decision is going to come next. But that, you know, that's going to be difficult enough as it is to make that decision, let alone deciding how they plan for next season. I wouldn't want to be the person having those discussions and making those decisions, because it's, you know, it's just a minefield, and it's, I hate to say it, but it's, you know, so lawsuits waiting to happen, really, isn't it? In terms of what they decide, you know, I know it's a difficult situation at the moment, but I think that's kind of the, you know, the area that we're in at the moment. You know, if they decide not to promote Leeds for next, you know, for next season into the Premier League, then it's so difficult to make a decision. The decision's got to be made, yeah, but how are they going to make it? I just don't know. It's so unprecedented, so difficult. They've got a few weeks yet until they actually go down that route. I think it's till, isn't it, UEFA are saying that football's got to be finished by the end of June. Is that right? Because of the contracts, I think.
I think the president, Seferin, if I'm pronouncing that rightly, said it needed to be completed now by August 1st. But then UEFA came out and corrected those statements, saying that, you know, they'll continue to assess the situation and kind of continue to play by ear, which is just what we keep hearing from everyone.
I think we're all in at the moment. We're all assessing the situation.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's not an easy position to be in. Wherever you are, a leader in an organization and an industry or whatever it is, right? So we have to be looking. It's evolving all the time, and you have to look at it. In terms of how the Premier League handled it, I think I was quite critical in the podcast previously because it was so blindingly obvious that they needed to shut down, and they had previously said that the games would go ahead. And then Mikel Arteta was tested positive, and everyone lost their shit. And the Premier League went, all games are shut down. And I think it was the right decision. But I was critical, but with a bit of reflection, it is true. There's nobody's ever been in this situation. I think the last like pandemic of this level was in 1918.
Spanish the
oldest,
flu.
You know, you'd have to be one of the oldest people in the world, right? So I don't think any of them work for the Premier League. So
I don't know. They might do.
Yeah, but and I did say that you know they could hold their job forever.
Yeah, exactly. But the point is that you know they're in a situation that nobody's been in. It reminds me actually of a conversation I had one of our HR director in my company, and she had been asked by one of the more junior members in the company, is there an HR policy for this stuff? And she was like, no, we don't have HR policies for pandemics. You know, like, you know, so it was quite funny. You know,
they will after this.
Yes, they will after this. Absolutely.
Yeah.
We obviously have emergency management systems and all that, but that's quite funny. But you know, same with the Premier League, right? Once they made the decision, it was the right decision. From there, I think nobody can criticize the way in which they, you know, even though they said, you know, we'll restart at the end of April. I personally think I think there's probably a realization even at that stage that they weren't going to be able to do it. But you can't just go, right, we can't do it. That, you know, they don't know you have to investigate the legalities of it, contracts, TV deals, everything. So you've got to kind of say, I guess what they did and certainly what I would have done with the benefit of hindsight, obviously, is what kind of what they've done, right? Is say, right, we'll try and play the season out. And then you're basically got your whole team scrambling over all the contracts, all the deals, PFA, FA, Premier League, everything, right? Everyone is just all the different kind of inter relationships and all that kind of stuff. And then working out what the ramifications of just dusting the season would be before you actually then dust the season. So I think what they've done, they've handled it well. I think, and in fairness to the Premier League, they're not the ones that have come out and started talking about behind closed doors and things like that. It's from what I can see, they've just said, they've said a few dates, and then they've said, oh, actually, that's clearly too ambitious. End of April is not going to happen. So when it's safe to do so, which I think is a fair statement to make. So it would be harsh. I wouldn't want to be critical of them now. I think in ultimately where we are, nobody could have done what they've done is the right job, I think.
Yeah, I think that's right. Absolutely.
Gotcha. Well, then, interested to hear how you guys are going to line up that with UEFA's current stance. I think, Jay, you mentioned now that the Belgian League has already crowned a winner. It sounds like, based on the timetable that we're hearing from the Netherlands on when their government thinks they'll be allowed to have public gatherings again, that season will end up being either voided or finalized with the standings as they currently are. UEFA's response to these two happenings has been to threaten that they won't allow clubs from leagues that halt or abandon their seasons to play in the Champions League or Europa League next season. What do you make of that almost kind of strong-arming some of the leagues to try to continue whenever they can?
Well, I haven't kept up with what UEFA's latest pronouncements have been, but I think
it changes a lot.
Yeah, I can imagine. But I think one thing is clear, that trying to create a cushion or a space by moving the Euros is going to prove to be totally futile in the end, because, you know, as we were saying, if we're sort of thinking about how to restructure next season, we have to factor the Euros into that. And I'm not entirely sure that's going to be the individual league's priorities. They're going to be thinking, how can we get back to as close to normal as we can in our own domestic situation without even thinking about what we have to do to accommodate that. So somebody mentioned earlier, I forget who it was, about possibly losing the League Cup, possibly even losing the FA Cup domestically. It wouldn't surprise me that we lose the Europa League next year. I think they'll try and do everything they can to make sure that the Champions League goes ahead. But again, we've got the whole ridiculous situation of conflicting ideas of who qualifies for it. So literally everything's up in the air. I hate to be so sort of non-committal about this. I think the fact that the only certainty is uncertainty is actually something we can hang our hats on at the moment.
Again, Steve made some real valid points there. And I think the strong arming comments there are difficult, because everybody, you know, we're all in the same scenario, and you know, the landscape is changing on a almost daily basis, or less than that at the moment, isn't it? It's almost on an hourly basis, just in terms of the statistics that are coming through and things like that. So I think it's possibly a bit foolish to kind of strong arm, because you know, as we've already mentioned before, none of us have experienced anything like this, and whatever business you're in, and it's a difficult one. Obviously, they need to be seen to be kind of being organised and making sure that everything is in order. But I think that's probably the wrong thing to do. I think at the moment, as we're talking, this season doesn't look like it's going to happen at any point across Europe, anywhere. So again, Steve, you mentioned the word futile there. I think it's probably futile on their point to even make that suggestion, really, to be handing out, you know, suggestions that, you know, teams of countries won't qualify if they cancel their league too early. It just seems a crazy thing to do. I think at the end of the day, it's, you know, this season doesn't look like it's going to happen again. Maybe they're wishful thinking more than anything else with that statement, but I just think it's probably an odd statement to make at this point, because we're all trying to learn on a daily basis, aren't we, really? And, you know, we're no different as to the next person. So yeah, it's a tough scenario, it really is. And I guess we're gonna get the odd comment like that, or the odd statement like that, from different organizations from different places. But until we start getting some direction and seeing some improvement, then, you know, that, yeah, we're not going to see this season. It's all about next season now, and how that's going to be organized and that kind of thing. So yeah, I think that's just kind of a silly comment by them to make.
Yeah, but I mean, so in fairness, I think in fairness to UEFA, which is an odd one for me, but what they actually said, it was a little bit more of a it was more reserved than, oh, they could. I think the media have said that they could be kicked out, and because of how they've interpreted the statement. Essentially what they've said was they think it can restart, and although their words are, we're confident it could, I don't know how confident, why they're confident, but that's what they've said. Essentially they think that it could restart, so they're not sure why people are abandoning leagues just yet. So that was the first bit. And then the second bit was, they said, we want to retain the integrity of the game, and therefore, you know, ideally have everything played out and results played out on the pitch. And that has been interpreted as, if it's not played out on the pitch, then you've broken the rules, because they've said played out on the pitch as per our rules and regulations and all that kind of stuff. That being said, they did have a final bit in, you know, I think the last bit of the statement was, well, you know, obviously this all depends on national government stuff, regulatory stuff. So they, there is an acknowledgement that what they've said, whilst it was a lot more definitive than and less open-ended than other statements made by sporting bodies, it's not as bad as, right, if people don't complete, they're going to be chucked out of the Champions League. It's an interpretation, because that's what the rules state. If a league hasn't completed, they can't be considered for European competition, right? So they didn't outright come out and say, clubs will be chucked out. What they said was, to uphold the integrity of the game, ideally we would like everything played out on the pitch. And also they said it's probably a bit early to be abandoning leagues, which I don't necessarily agree with, but I guess it's part of their, they need to try at least to try and get them all done. So that was a little bit of a defense of the statement. I don't think, if it was meant as a threat, it's obviously doesn't really matter, right? Who gives a shit about UEFA if the UK government and, you know, Italy is on lockdown, France is going to be, you know, Spain is on lockdown, UK is going to be on some kind of lockdown, or, you know, other countries are like no more than 50 people in a group. You know, that, who cares what UEFA say? Mm-hmm. You know, the government and, you know, the police are, you know, in Italy are arresting people if they're out and about. In India, they're battering them with sticks, you know. If UEFA say we've got to play the leagues, what the hell? What, you know? Who cares? Nobody really cares. Exactly, right. So I think it's more of a. I think it was a fair statement. It was maybe a bit stronger than others, but ultimately they want to try and get the leagues done. It's just not going to happen. So they will probably be thinking about the future, and I think they're probably in the same boat as everyone else in trying to work out exactly what this means for their, like, for the game, right? So yeah, we'll see what happens from their point of view. But I don't think, I mean, imagine this: if everyone abandons their leagues, what are they going to do? Hold a Champions League? Who's going to be in the Champions League, right? You know, Spain are not going to restart. They're in absolute lockdown right now. Italy aren't going to restart. So you're telling me a Champions League without Barcelona, Real Madrid, Juventus, and then we're do you see what I mean? So
all of a sudden, the North London clubs have a chance.
Clutching at straws there, Kev.
Yeah, perhaps a touch. But Joshy, I am glad that you mentioned what the actual comments were. I may have found a less great source that, yeah, like you mentioned, had kind of been re-narrativized. So do appreciate you correcting that so that I know that we are talking correctly about this. I did want to just wrap up by talking to you guys about your clubs to see how you guys have been handling this, where the workers, those non-playing workers stand that we mentioned earlier, if you've allowed players to return home. What's the current situation surrounding your clubs at the moment?
Well, personally, I was in London for the Manchester United game the weekend that the season got cancelled. And that would have been the first time I would have visited the new stadium. I just hadn't had a chance to get to the new stadium yet. So, but the good thing about that cancellation, Kevin, was I got to see my son, who's an NHS worker, and I spent the weekend with him instead of going to the game. So I was very, very happy about that. Spurs initially made, obviously, a bit of a faux pas in terms of the furlough arrangements. They didn't handle that particularly well. As again, as I said, comes back to the idea of the optics and how people perceive what you do rather than what you actually do and what the information is that you have when you do it. We're in the same boat as everybody else. We're sort of scrambling to just do the right thing as far as we can. But also, you know, we're making the rules up as we go along, and the Premier League are doing the same. So you just really have to see what developments are going to be proposed to everybody about, as Joshy says, in some way finishing out the season if they, you know, fly all the teams to Australia or something like that and play all the games in Australia and just televise them. I don't know. I mean, so that's, you know, they certainly have the money to be able to do that. I don't know, honestly. It changes from week to week. And, again, the other thing is, we were talking about contractual obligations and the idea that the Premier League has a contractual obligation to Sky to provide broadcast content for a specific length of time and a specific number of games. I mean, my dad's 83 and he's isolating, and the one thing that he misses more than anything in the world is being able to watch live football. But that is no reason, any kind of legal or even political consideration is no reason to put public health even more at risk than it already is. And so I think that has got to be the overarching consideration when we come to thinking about the club employees or the players or the board or particularly the fans. The fans are kind of the key element in how we think about what football means going forward.
To be honest, I'm quite proud of what Palace have done, actually, ever since. I mean, ahead of the Premier League being suspended on that afternoon or that weekend or that day that I think they announced an hour before Arteta was announced as having a virus, that they said the games are going to go ahead that weekend. And then that obviously dramatically changed after the news about Arteta. But we had a group of cyclists cycling from Sellers Park to Bournemouth, which is the game we were due to play that Saturday. All for charity, all for the Palace for Life Foundation. They obviously arrived on Saturday to no game being played, which was unfortunate for their perspective after an overnight stay on the way down. I think they started off on the Thursday to go down there. But a brief mention to them for raising a fair amount of money and no football to be seen when they got down to the South Coast, unfortunately. But the club have not decided to furlough staff. As I mentioned earlier, Steve Parish has vowed to continue paying the non-playing staff throughout this period, however long it lasts. Obviously, those people would be paid, would be working through to the end of the season and some of them across the summer as well. So that's valiant from his perspective. Also, the Palace for Life Foundation are doing an awful lot of good in and around the community, as are a number of Palace players. Andros Townsend and Wilfred Zaha are two, to name just two, actually, from the Palace squad that do donate to local charities, including Palace for Life. And we're massive in the local community in terms of what they do. There was a draw, a special super draw at the weekend. Even though Palace didn't play, they went ahead with a super draw, and it was online. You could buy tickets, and it was a food bank special. So all the money was dedicated to a local food bank. So Palace is doing an awful lot during this difficult time for the local community. And I think they've also offered the stadium for use for the NHS as well, which I think is still waiting to get approval. So, a lot is being done by Palace, and I'm not surprised because they do a lot of good stuff in the community. So hopefully they continue to do so across however long this goes on for. So, yeah, I can't speak highly enough, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, from my perspective, I'm probably a little bit surprised at how well United have managed this. I'm very proud of the way in which the club have behaved in all of this. And the reason I say I'm a little bit surprised is because of our owners. I absolutely hate them. And they are all about the money. They're all about the cash. And all of their actions have been along those lines. Obviously, throughout the years, the club itself is not run by the owners in that sense, like the day-to-day. There are a lot of community efforts. So, not surprised that those things continued. But from this specific situation, the club have guaranteed all salaries for non-playing staff, including the ones that are temporary. So the ones that come on match days and so they come through agencies and things like that. So I think those have been included. So it comes to 2,000 when you extend it out, 2,000 people that they've kind of guaranteed those payments for. They also donated, I mean, it wasn't in the grand scheme of the club itself, not a huge amount, but they donated to local food banks, I think about 100,000. They have, as a squad of players, the players have agreed to donate 30% of their salaries to, as I mentioned earlier, local community efforts and NHS efforts with this COVID-19 stuff. And then individually, players have been doing stuff. So Marcus Rashford has done stuff. Juan Mata always seems to be doing stuff. So, prior to this thing
back in the day, right?
Yeah, which is awesome, and it's accumulating. So it's still going. You know, it started off with a few footballers, but I'm not sure how many he's got on it now. But when I last checked, which was well over a year ago, he had about 100 different footballers on it. So when you consider that how much they earn, 1% may not be a lot, but it is when you add it all up like that. So I'm not sure exactly where that is, but he's doing other stuff as well. But even prior to that, right? So we had that game that was, who was it against? I can't remember now, but which ended up being behind closed doors, and that was away. So it was against Bruges, I think. I don't know. I'm getting things mixed up. But the club gave all away fans who were going to be traveling 350 quid as part of their, like, a bit of payment back for travel and stuff. They didn't need to do that, but they did. They're not taking ticket payments for next season. And they've frozen season ticket prices. They've done a few other things as well. So, I think ultimately, I don't know. Yes, I'm very proud of the way in which they've behaved. I'm proud of actually the players coming, chipping together and going, this is what we're going to do. But ultimately, the way the club has behaved is, for me, how any normal person in that situation should behave, right? Because we're a rich club. We make a lot of money. We bring in a lot of revenue. So all of those things are, you have, if you're just kind of doing the norm, that's cool. So that, which I think is where we are. I don't think the club itself have gone massively above and beyond. But when you consider other clubs have done, you know, have furloughed staff and stuff, then you've got to be proud of the way in which they've behaved. But I think for me, that's normal behavior, right? In this kind of situation, to tell people, sorry, you know, we're going to, first of all, you know, some companies have launched all their staff, right? Because they can't keep them on, which I'm not sure I agree with all of that. Shareholders will be pocketing money and things like that. So yeah, I am proud of the way the club has responded, and in particular the players. So, you know, which in this football world of tribalism has given me a lot of ammunition in the last week. So it's very good for me.
All right. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on today. If you'd like to tell the folks where they could find you or anything you're working on, now would be a good time.
Thanks very much for having me on again, Kevin. That was a great discussion in difficult times. I'm Steve McGookin. You can get me on Twitter at Steve McGookin. You can also follow at NY Spurs. And for my non-football writing, if you're interested in that, you can find it at northernslant.com.
Yeah, Kev, thanks for having us on in what is really odd, difficult times for us all at the moment. But it's good to get back to some sort of normality and talk about some footballs, which is good. You can get me on Palace Fans on Twitter or on Instagram and Facebook as well, at the Eagles Beak, and also my radio show, which is at the Meridian SS.
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks, Kev, for having me on. You can find me on Twitter at MediJoshi, so MediJoshi, where I'm tweeting a lot about the coronavirus at the moment. Lots of misinformation out there, which I am trying to correct and also answer questions. So find me on there if you have questions. And I also kind of contribute to other podcasts and football YouTube channels. And I'll finish with stay safe, stay informed, and stay at home.
Yeah, thanks again, guys. It really was a pleasure. Even in these dark times, it's nice to just get together and be able to chat about football, even if it's about all these negative ramifications currently surrounding it. But yeah, thanks again for joining me, folks at home. We hope you keep listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.